And once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM, www.freakradio.org, 91.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, 87.9 FM on Post World Radio in Seattle, and 87.9 FM on Mojo Radio in Point Arena, California. My name's the V-Man, and today we commemorate the two-year anniversary since September 11th, 2001, when four hijacked jets were slammed into significant buildings in the U.S., killing over 3,000 civilians. I'll be speaking today with Michelle Shostudovsky, director of the Center for Research on Globalization and professor of economics at the University of Ottawa, about his ideas about what Bush and the Bush administration knew prior to the September 11th, 2001 attacks. But first, we'll get this week's PR Watch Radio spin. Stand by, stay tuned. And in this week's edition of the PR Watch Radio spin, spinning the environment at the White House matches the spinning revolving door at the EPA. Wound in action, wound in action, untold story of the Iraq War, and the UK gets a new Department of Truth. The PR Watch Radio spin. Coming up next from Laura Miller at PR Watch. Stand by.
With this week's edition of the Radio Weekly Spin, I'm Laura Miller. Grist Magazine's Amanda Griscom writes, Democrats and moderate Republicans alike are accusing Bush of having the worst environmental record in history, of surreptitiously tearing down the regulatory framework that yielded vast improvements in the nation's air and water quality and land conservation over the last 30 years. In response to growing criticism of its environmental policies, the administration has made every effort to finesse its public relations strategy, but none whatsoever to change its approach to environmental policies themselves. The same high-level image makers who had Bush somersaulting onto an aircraft carrier on his way home from the Persian Gulf have also been meticulously controlling the public image of Bush's environmental agenda. Environmental spinning in Washington includes the revolving door at the Environmental Protection Agency. Knight Ritter reports two top EPA officials who were deeply involved in easing an air pollution rule for old power plants just took private sector jobs with firms that benefit from the changes. Days after the changes in the power plant pollution rule were announced, John Pemberton, the chief of staff in the EPA's Air and Radiation Office, told colleagues he would be joining Southern Company, an Atlanta-based utility that's the nation's number two power plant polluter and was a driving force in the lobbying for the rule change. Southern Company, which gave more than $3.4 million in political contributions over the last 4 years while it sought the changes, hired Pemberton as its director of federal affairs. Also departing EPA is Ed Krennic, associate administrator for congressional affairs. Krennic joins Bracewell and Patterson, a top Houston-based law firm that coordinated lobbying for several utilities on easing the power plant pollution rule, and houses the Electric Reliability Coordinating Council, which also advocated for rule changes that the EPA just enacted. And the door spins both ways. Another EPA Air and Radiation Administrator, Jeffrey Holmstead, previously worked as a lawyer and lobbyist for chemical companies and industry groups seeking looser pollution standards. The Washington Post Vernon Loeb writes, U.S. battlefield casualties in Iraq are increasing dramatically in the face of continued attacks by remnants of Saddam Hussein's military and other forces, with almost 10 American troops a day now being officially declared wounded in action. With so many troops wounded in action and attacks on soldiers becoming commonplace, U.S. Central Command only releases the numbers of wounded when asked, making the combat injuries of U.S. troops in Iraq one of the most untold stories of the war, Loeb writes. Since the war began, more than 6,000 service members have been flown back to the United States. The number includes the 1,124 wounded in action, 301 who received non-hostile injuries in vehicle accidents and other mishaps, and thousands who became physically or mentally ill. The British government is setting up a new Department of Truth in an effort to end damaging publicity about the role of politically appointed spin doctors. The Independent reports the rumored brain behind the strategy, however, is Peter Mandelson, the former Labour Party communications director, who is credited with being the first of a new wave of spin doctors when he worked for the party in the 1980s. In other spin doctor news, Alistair Campbell, Prime Minister Tony Blair's top flack, has announced his resignation amid continuing controversy over his role in building the case for war with Iraq. Named England's real deputy prime minister, Campbell said his family had paid a heavy price for the real and intense pressures of his job. He will be replaced by David Hill, a PR executive at Bell Pottinger Communications and managing director of Good Relations Limited, which has represented Monsanto in the UK. For these stories and more, visit PR Watch's website at www.prwatch.org.
And we thank Laura Miller at PR Watch for this week's Radio Spin here on Rockin' the Boat. My name is the V-Man, and in just a few moments, I'll be speaking with the director of the Center for Research on Globalization and professor of economics at the University of Ottawa, Michelle Shostakovsky, about what the Bush administration knew prior to 9/11/2001. Stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat coming up next. You're tuned into Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's a song for Rawa by David Slusser. 2 years ago, on September 11th, 2001, a team of 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked four commercial jetliners and flew them into both towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and a fourth plane crashed in a field in Somerset, Pennsylvania, causing the deaths of more than 3,000 people. As media outlets across the U.S. remember the day terror struck America, we hear countless stories of heroic rescues and tragic losses, but left unsaid are any questions about the true motivations of the terror attacks or what role the U.S. military and intelligence agencies may have had in those attacks. Many reports have cropped up since September 11, 2001, that compel any thinking person to have doubts about the official version of the story. Joining me today on Rockin' the Boat to talk about the complicity of U.S. intelligence agencies in the 9/11 attacks is Michelle Shostakovsky, professor of economics at the University of Ottawa. He's also the author of numerous articles and two books, The Globalization of Poverty and the recently published War and Globalization, The Truth Behind September 11th. Michelle Shostakovsky is also the director of the Center for Research on Globalization, which publishes the magazine Global Outlook and hosts the critically acclaimed website www.globalresearch.ca. I want to welcome you, Michelle Shostakovsky, to the program.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be on the program.
Well, thanks for joining us. Why don't we begin by talking a bit about Osama bin Laden? It's pretty much common knowledge among listeners of Free Radio Santa Cruz that bin Laden was recruited and trained by the United States to fight a proxy war in Afghanistan against the Soviets. And a lot of mainstream media reports, however, suggest that somewhere along the way, bin Laden sort of turned on his CIA handlers. You make the argument that he always has been and continues to be a CIA asset. Can you talk about this? What evidence do you have to make these claims?
Well, there are many official documents which prove that bin Laden, or more precisely the Al-Qaeda network, has collaborated with agencies of the U.S. government in the post-Cold War period. And in fact, we have evidence of August 2001, where the Al-Qaeda network was involved in paramilitary activities in Macedonia, and at the same time, there were senior military officers detached by the Pentagon who were working side by side with the Mujahideen, with Islamic brigades. And this is not a matter of any doubt, because it was confirmed by statements by the Macedonian Prime Minister, who actually accused the United States of collaborating with the terrorists. The other very clear-cut case of collaboration between the U.S. government and Al-Qaeda is during the Clinton administration. And it was during the war in the civil war in Bosnia when U.S. military inspectors appointed by the Pentagon were working hand in glove with the Third World Relief Agency, which is a front organization controlled by bin Laden, and they were bringing in weapons and Mujahideen into Bosnia. Now, again, that may sound incredible, but it's not me who says it. It's actually a document of the U.S. Congress. More precisely, the committee of the Republican Party of the U.S. Congress, which in 97 accused the Clinton administration of collaborating with Al-Qaeda. And that document is on record. It's on our website. It's on the website of the U.S. Congress. And the reason why they didn't make that document public is that they preferred to go after Clinton for his affair with Monica Lewinsky. But what I'm saying is that Osama bin Laden is not an outside enemy, which is a threat to America. He is, in fact, an inside enemy. He is an individual with an organization which has been supported and abetted by the U.S. military and intelligence apparatus from the Cold War period, but also in the wake of the Cold War and up to the present. So that in itself casts a lot of doubt on the claims of the Bush administration that Al-Qaeda is a threat to America and so on and so forth. Now, the other, I think, very significant element in this puzzle is the role of Pakistan's inter-services intelligence.
You write about a meeting before 9/11, in the days before 9/11, between the head of the ISI, Mahmoud Ahmad, and members of the U.S. military intelligence. Tell us more about
this. Well, it's far more serious than that, because let me give you the background. The ISI is known to have supported Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, and that goes back to the 1980s, but they've always done it on behalf of the CIA. And when the CIA led its operation in the early 80s, under the Reagan administration. First it was under Jimmy Carter, then it was under the Reagan administration. They always used the Pakistan ISI as a proxy, which then would channel support to the terrorists. However, more recently, we know, because we have an FBI report published late September, which in fact indicates that Pakistan's ISI and the head of Pakistan's ISI, the then head of Pakistan's ISI, General Mahmoud Ahmad, were behind the terrorists and had actually transferred money to the terrorists. And in the report, which was broadcast on ABC News in late September, what they say is that, in fact, there was a money man, a mastermind behind the terrorists, and it was later confirmed that this was General Mahmoud Ahmad, the head of Pakistan Inter-Services Intelligence, to the effect that the 9/11 attacks were not the result of a terrorist act by an isolated terrorist cell of Al-Qaeda or whoever. It was a well-planned intelligence operation, and behind that, the institutional base of that was Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence. So that's one aspect. The other aspect, which is of course a matter of serious consideration, is the fact that the alleged money man, mastermind behind the terrorists, General Mahmoud Ahmad, according to the FBI report, which is on record, was on an official visit to Washington, red carpet treatment from the 4th to the 13th of September. And this individual, who is alleged to have transferred money to the terrorists, was also meeting with Colin Powell, Richard Armitage, George Tenet, members of the U.S. Congress, and in fact, on the morning of 9/11, the head of Pakistan's inter-services intelligence was having breakfast with Senator Bob Graham and Representative Porter Goss on Capitol Hill. Bob Graham and Porter Goss are the two Florida lawmen who are responsible for the so-called joint inquiry. Now, the Washington Post, in reviewing this mysterious breakfast meeting on Capitol Hill, they actually say and they acknowledge the fact that Bob Graham and Porter Goss were having breakfast with an individual who is known to be close to have supported Osama bin Laden and Al Qaeda. Okay, so they say that Porter Goss and Bob Graham were having breakfast with an individual who is known to support Al Qaeda and the Taliban, and later it is confirmed by the FBI that this individual is the alleged, or at least according to an FBI report, Ahmad is the alleged financier or money man behind the terrorists. So that the Washington Post reports very much later, actually, they never even talked about it when it occurred. It came in May after the foreknowledge scandal hit the headlines. And they say on the morning, I quote, on the morning of September 11, Goss and Graham were having breakfast with a Pakistani general named Mahmoud Ahmad, the soon-to-be sacked head of Pakistan's intelligence service. Ahmad ran a spy agency notoriously close to Osama bin Laden and the Taliban. Now, there are two issues. One, the Washington Post never begs the question, what were these members of Congress doing together with an individual who, in fact, supported and financed the 9/11 attacks. Secondly, they don't bear on the question that Bob Graham and Porter Goss, the individuals who had breakfast with the alleged money man, also produced a 900-page report in which Pakistan is not mentioned one time in the whole report, okay? As if the Pakistan connection was irrelevant. Even the Council on Foreign Relations has acknowledged the role of Pakistan's inter-services intelligence in support of the terrorists. And the other aspect of this saga is that the head of Pakistan's inter-services intelligence on the 12th and 13th of September was called into the State Department. And there he met Richard Armitage and Colin Powell, and an agreement was signed on behalf of the Pakistani government to cooperate in going after the terrorists. And the man who was responsible for signing this agreement and negotiating this agreement is the general who, according to the FBI, is the money man behind the terrorists. It's a little bit like asking Al Capone to come into the State Department, and then you say, Al, could you help us to go after organized crime? We are in, I mean, all these things sound totally unreal, but what I'm saying is that there's some very dubious links between senior Bush officials on the one hand and the alleged money man behind the terrorists according to official FBI reports.
Also, on the morning of 9/11, you had members of the Carlyle Group meeting in Washington, D.C., and the Carlyle Group being one of the biggest, I think the 12th largest weapons manufacturers, defense contractors, which has on its head, on its board of directors, former President George W. Bush, and also members of Osama bin Laden's family. What more can you tell me about the
Exactly. I mean, the relationship between the Bushes and the bin Ladens goes back to the 1980s. The bin Ladens is a very powerful family, a very wealthy family, and the brother-in-law Khalid bin Mahfouz of Osama bin Laden, Osama bin Laden's brother-in-law Khalid bin Mahfouz, has been involved in a number of joint ventures with people associated with the Republican Party and the upper spheres of the oil industry and so on. Now, it just so happens, I think it's important to point it out, it's not only the link between the Bush administration, the Bush family and the bin Laden family, which is amply documented. Mm-hmm. It sounds absurd that Bush would go on the network television and start accusing Osama bin Laden of this, that, and the other, and nobody in the media actually has underlined the fact that the bin Laden family and the Bush family have business ties. Mm-hmm. But there's something even far more serious. Thomas Keene, who heads the 9/11 Commission, former governor of New Jersey, and whose mandate is to reveal the truth on 9/11, well, he is a former business partner of the brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden, because when he resigned actually from his position on Amerada Hess, which is an oil company, he was on the board of directors shortly before becoming chairman of the commission, of the 9/11 commission, and Amerada Hess was in a joint venture with Delta Oil Company of Saudi Arabia, which is owned by Osama's brother-in-law, and it just so happens that Khalid bin Mahfouz, the brother-in-law, the partner of Thomas Keene, who has close links with the Bush family, is also the individual identified in the lawsuit, in the $1 trillion lawsuit by the families of the victims of 9/11. So this is, I mean, these are the intricacies of this situation, of this 9/11 saga, which have not been made public. And if people want to get further insights, I suggest they can call us up. I'll give you a toll-free number. It's 1-888-713-8500. They can order my book, which is War and Globalization, The Truth Behind September 11, or our magazine, Global Outlook Magazine. I'll repeat the phone number, 1-888-713-8500, or they can go online to www.globalresearch, all in one word, globalresearch.ca. CA stands for Canada. And you can order these publications online as well, or call us up at the number that I indicated.
Then we have post 9/11 reports. Last May of 2002 came out, FBI agent Colleen Rowley came out with the Phoenix memo, agent, you know, where she blew the whistle on agents' failures to investigate information that Al-Qaeda was preparing attacks. You say this is all smoke and mirrors?
Well, what I'm saying is, from my point of view, the issue of foreknowledge is a red herring. Uh-huh. I don't question the validity of Colleen Rowley's memo to FBI Director Robert Mueller, but what I'm saying is that the evidence we have is not of the nature of, let's say, intelligence failures or lapses by the FBI or the or the CIA, and the fact that they knew but they failed to act. This is the kind of thing which is coming forth in by many of the critics, actually, saying that, well, we think the Bush administration didn't take the right measures, et cetera, against this impending attack, and they didn't they knew but they didn't act, and so on and so forth. The whole foreknowledge issue for me is a red herring, mm-hmm. because in as much as Al Qaeda is an intelligence asset of the CIA, of course they know, and they follow the activities of these intelligence assets. It doesn't mean that Al Qaeda is working for the U.S. government, but Al Qaeda is functioning in a way which is consistent with U.S. foreign policy objectives, right. as defined actually right at the outset of this process in the early 80s, and to say that it's an issue of foreknowledge or lack of response of the U.S. Of the U.S. Air Force, or that decisions weren't taken, I think distorts the fact that Colin Powell met the general. Okay, Colin Powell met the money man. That there are close links between the CIA and the ISI, and the ISI supports the Taliban and Al Qaeda. The Taliban, in fact, would never have formed a government had it not been for U.S. military aid, which was channeled through the ISI.
Many have speculated that the U.S. really truly invaded Afghanistan. This is all a part of a big plot. This 9/11 attacks and the invasion of Afghanistan was all just a big plot to go in and build an oil pipeline from the Balkan region to get some of that oil and natural gas reserves there. What do you make of these arguments? Is that the true motivation? And we just have about 2 minutes left.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Afghanistan is at the hub of very significant oil reserves. It's a land bridge for pipeline routes which cross from the Caspian Sea basin down to the Arabian Sea. It borders onto China. It borders onto the former Soviet Union. It is very strategic from the U.S. point of view. And the other important thing is that it is the largest producer of heroin in the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, it produces up to between 60 to 80% of the production of heroin. And that in itself is big bucks. It's billions and billions of dollars, which are channeled into the Western banking system, and it just so happens that the Taliban had introduced in the years before this military intervention in 99 and 2000, they implemented a very significant and effective drug eradication program where poppy production was eliminated, opium production was prohibited, and the production of opium, which is the raw material to produce heroin, collapsed by 90%. And it just so happens that in the wake of the U.S. military intervention, opium production has skyrocketed up to its historical levels, and Hamid Karzai, who happens to be a former employee of Unocal Corporation, the president of Afghanistan, is also protecting the narcotics trade, the trade in opium and heroin across Central Asia to Western markets.
Well, we're lots more to talk about, but we are out of time, unfortunately. We definitely would like to get you back on to revisit some of these issues in future programs. I've been speaking tonight with Michelle Shostadovsky, Director of the Center for Research on Globalization and Professor of Economics at the University of Ottawa. For more info, again, globalresearch.ca. And once again, the 1-800 number you gave out?
Is 1-888-713-8500.
Appreciate your time tonight, Michel.
It's a great pleasure. Greetings to everybody in California.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
And that's going to do it for us for another edition of Rockin' the Boat. Join me again tomorrow from 5:30 to 6 o'clock. I'll be talking about the case of Leonard Peltier on his, I think, 60th birthday. Stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3.
Do the math. I met his buddy with George Tenet. George Tenet, his buddy with Muhammad Atta. His buddy with George Tenet, his buddy with Muhammad Atta. His buddy. with George Tenet. His buddy buddy with Muhammad Atta. 28 flight 11 makes an unplanned 100-degree turn to the side. 904, our commander-in-chief is told the second plane has hit. America is under attack. He's in an elementary school and continues to read about ghosts for the next 20 minutes or so. Meanwhile, Secret Service with Dick Cheney to an underground presidential bunker. 8:50 a.m., there is a loss of contact with a plane detoured off course to the Capitol. It wasn't until 9:24 a.m. that American fighters were scrambled. This is 34 minutes after flight control lost contact with plane, and long after two planes have already crashed. The 11th wasn't the first time a hijack ever took place in America. Never has there been this long a delay when any of the flights were hijacked ever. 10 minutes is the maximum allowed. 34 minutes is unprecedented. This is 24 minutes that made the difference in allowing an attack on the Pentagon. Who gets the blame? Richard Myers was promoted to chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest military office in the country. After the worst attack on America was perpetrated under his watch. There must have been military order. There is no other logical explanation for 34 minutes when only 10 of you would be allowed. Meanwhile, chairman of intelligence committees are having breakfast with Mahmoud Ahmed, the head of the Pakistani ISI, who had authorized a $100,000 wire transfer to Muhammad Atta, the alleged ringleader of the 911 attack. There must have been a military order. There is no other logical reason for 34 minutes when 10 are only legally allowed. Wow. Questions. Visit unanswered questions.org. Truth will help. Conservatives, liberals, everybody. Whoever, the media revolution. There is an agenda. I met his buddy with George Tenet. His buddy with Muhammad Atta.